Hi everyone, this is Jackie from Cashflow Depot, and today I'm joined by David Tilney from davidtilney.com, and we're going to talk a little bit about master leasing and why it's such an amazing way to generate cash flow, especially in today's environment, and also the importance of learning about property management in the changing markets that are happening throughout the United States, all kinds of new rules and regulations, and you really have to stay up on it. So, David, welcome to the call.
Oh, thanks a lot, Jackie. Happy to be here.
Yes, I want to talk a little bit about so many people that are Cashflow Depot members and other people that I talk to. They really need to get their cash flow built up so that they can replace the income from their job, or even, you know, if they've already been an investor, they just want to increase their cash flow, but they don't necessarily want to increase the number of houses that they have to go out and actually buy. So master leasing is an ideal way to do that, because you can get the cash flow, but you don't have the liabilities of actually owning the property. Can you tell me a little bit, or tell our listeners a little bit about how master leasing works?
Sure. Well, first of all, we ought to define it. And the definition from my standpoint is you lease a property from owner A, and you turn around and sublease that property to an occupant, and you take a spread out of the middle. And the spread can be either a percentage of what you earn if and when you earn something, meaning when you receive rent, or it can be a fixed amount that you've agreed to up front, or anything in between. So, but that's the basic of a master lease. And the reason it's just come to the forefront right now is, first of all, folks that have been flippers in the past, they just can't survive. The margins are thinner and thinner. Property costs have gone through the roof, and it's just they're struggling to find income. And this is something that works in any market. Now, and off the other side of that is investors who are trying to buy and hold long term. Very, very difficult right now. Prices are going through the roof. When people put properties on the market for sale in our neck of the woods, they're bid up. The prices are higher. So if you want to produce an income, I just don't know a safer way to do business in any market whatsoever. And I think it might be helpful, Jackie, for some people listening to hear some examples. And you and I both know some of these people that have created a business doing master leasing. So I'll just list a couple of them and some of the differences, because they are all very, very unique. John Cain and Lauren Brand, I mean, they went to Panama and spoke to your group there, and they came to Colorado with virtually nothing. They had, my memory serves me correctly, a little pop-up tent trailer, and they wanted to be here. They wanted to start a new life and a new business. They started leasing properties and turned around and subleased them as vacation rentals. Of course, they're in the area where vacation rentals are very popular. They're in the mountains. And lo and behold, they built their business up fairly quickly to generate, my understanding is, $20,000 a month master leasing these properties. Yeah. Most people can survive on $20,000 a month. Mm-hmm. Matt Funk, a guy from Tampa, you know, he printed my seminar manual for 2 years running, and the second year he came to the seminar. Well, shortly thereafter, he sold his printing business and out of his house started master leasing properties and subleasing them, replaced his income, has replaced a lot of his wife's income. He sat on his back patio running his business and raising two young children. Worked real well. Jan Lazier, good friend that I've known for years, she, when the market was really high and people couldn't sell their properties in Pebble Beach, she's out in Pebble Beach, California, she decided to go to owners that had their properties listed and say, let me lease them or rent them month to month while they're listed for sale. And if you get a contract on them, great, I'll cancel my rental contract immediately. But in 6 months after leasing nine properties, she made $84,000 because she leased these high-priced houses in Pebble Beach, stuck some furniture in them, subleased them as vacation rentals. You know, I haven't done any of these things, but they all came from the concept of master leasing. Dwayne Talley, another guy in Bonita Beach, Florida, he told me that after he came to my class, he was a real estate salesperson. He controlled the sales at a condo complex. And most condo complexes in Southwest Florida only allow for long-term leases, but his would allow for short-term leases. And so he went to owners and said, gee, if you want to get in the rental pool, because the owners would only come down for short periods of time, and they really bought these condos for future use when they were in retirement. Anyway, he said, if you want to get in the rental pool, you lease them to me, and I take care of it. He told me that he made $140,000 between Christmas and Easter one year. I haven't done that either. And I don't know if that was gross or net, but it's a significant enough number to show people that it is a safe way to get into the real estate business. My son-in-law saw our business, liked it, and it started out with little or no capital, and he leased a lot of properties. Now, what's a lot? He had somewhere in the neighborhood of 100. It flexed up and down depending on the market. But he turned around and subleased them, and he supports my daughter, 3 kids and a dog, and has a very nice lifestyle. But more than that, leasing those properties gave him the opportunity to test drive them, so to speak, to see which properties were good rentals and which ones did not make good rentals. And ultimately, he had the opportunity to buy quite a few of those properties. He had the opportunity to option some of those properties. But the lease was kind of the first bite out of the property that allowed for future negotiation, as long as he underpromised and overperformed and did a good job for the owners. What benefits can you derive from leasing properties? You know, Peter Fortunato, I think in his paper course, comes up with a really good illustration of the various benefits that you can carve out of real estate. And I just want to point out that a good master lease gives you a heck of a lot more than just the income, or can, depending on how it's structured. So let me just give you a few ideas. Obviously, it can generate income. But think about tax benefits for a moment. You know, if you manage people's properties as a fee manager, that is ordinary income. That is earned income. And if you have $100,000 of fee management income, the taxes on that are roughly a little over $31,000. If instead of managing someone's property and acting as their agent, you lease their property and sublease it and net the exact same $100,000, your taxes are a little over $19,000. What's the difference? Rental income is deemed by the IRS to be passive income, and passive income is not subject to self-employment tax. So you just knock 15% right off the top. So though, if there are any people who are in the management business that are listening to this, you ought to consider changing the title on the top of your management agreement and change it to lease, and have most of the same things in there, and a number of things happen. First of all, the taxes get better. Second of all, your control over the property increases tremendously. The biggest problem I ever had when I managed for owners was never the tenants. It was always the owners, because they thought they owned the property, and they'd want to call me up and tell me what I should do with it. And my approach really was always, you know, only one of us can manage the property. They are you, not both. And what they hired me to do was they hired me to manage it, and the only thing I had to offer was my time and my expertise. And when owners started taking too much of my time, I essentially canceled my contract and moved on to someone else. Master leasing instead of managing solves that problem completely. Another issue, if you own the ground, you can depreciate it. That means you can write it all off, right? No, you can't write it all off. You can't write the land off. And you write it off over 27 and a half years. Think about this for a second. If you lease the property, every dime that you pay in rent is an expense. You write off 100% of your rent expense. There's no limitation. There's no alternative minimum tax preference items. There's no recapture or depreciation. Good tax benefits for master leasing that people don't really think about. Profit. You can sell or sublease a master lease interest to another company, and I did that. 18 years ago, we moved from Colorado to Florida. We maintain property in Colorado, and we maintain a secondary residence here for the summer. But when I left, I was master leasing more than 100 houses. And as good as our system was, it still took time to do receivables and payables. And I do receive all of my rents in 5 minutes a month because I do take rents out of the tenant's bank account, but it still was something I no longer wanted to do. So I subleased all of my master leases to another management company who dealt with the bookkeeping and dealt with the on-site resident managers, on-site tenants, I'm sorry, who from my standpoint are my resident managers because they're in the property, they're taking care of the property. But they dealt with the bookkeeping, and I dealt with my relationships with the owners. So you can get a profit by essentially bowing out. And just so you can see the numbers on that, from my standpoint, I felt if I sold my management business or my master leasing business at that time, that I would probably generate a year's income paid over 3 years. What I ended up getting was 40% of what I got before forever. And from my way of thinking, 40% forever was better than 33 1/3% for 3 years. So there's good opportunities there. You can sell the accounts. You can lease them. I leased them. Growth. I leased a house back in 1984 or 1985, I'm not exactly sure which, for 35 years at a fixed rent. 10 years later, the owner came to me, and we decided it was time to sell the property. I was given 50% of the appreciation to remove my lease from the property. I also received all the cash flow during that time. Now, think about this for a minute. There are a lot of folks that just before the last downturn in real estate bought a bunch of properties. If I owned that property, trust me, it would be harder to get out a title than if I leased that property, especially since I create the leases. So you have a lot of flexibility, but you also have less risk than you do in ownership. Management allows you to manage your subtenant, but don't ever put yourself out as a manager. You're not a manager. Most states require licensing to be a manager, and there's a reason for that. They owe their fiduciary responsibility to their principal, the person they're working for, and yet their business plan is to maximize their bottom line. So that potential conflict there is why licensing is required. If you master lease instead of managing, you are a professional landlord, and you are working for yourself. You are not working for anyone else. You're not working for the owner of the property or the tenant. So make sure that you understand that. It simplifies so much, especially for those of you who are currently managing for other people as an agent. If you change that, it just makes life so much easier. Use. You can always use any of these properties that you lease. You don't have to sublease them. Amortization. Amortization is the killing off of a loan. That if someone owns a property and has debt on it and it's an amortized loan, that if they just breathe oxygen for a period of time, the loan will pay off and the property will be free and clear. Can you get that with a master lease? No, but you can get it with a master lease option, where you option the equity of the property. Now, when would I go for a lease option instead of a lease? Because typically when I'm negotiating, I want to pay the least amount because I'm in it for the cash flow. And generally speaking, that means that I don't try and negotiate for an option initially because owners think that if you have a lease option, you have more than a lease, and they either want to charge you something for the option, they want to charge you option consideration that you paid for that in addition to your lease, or they want to charge you inflated rent. And I don't see a reason to do that. Where I would negotiate a lease option up front is when an owner really wants to sell the property, but it's not saleable, and they don't want to lease it to me. So if they really want to sell it, I will offer to lease option it, and I'm not opposed to offering them a high strike price on the option, as long as I can get low payments on the lease, because an option is a right. It is not an obligation. So at the end of my lease, if the property has not increased enough, I can abandon the option, or I can renegotiate the option, or I can renegotiate the lease. But I can throw it away and leave it alone, but I will use a lease option to negotiate low payments on my rent when I'm dealing with an owner that wants to sell. I'll essentially say, okay, I will lease option it today because I can't close today, but down the road I will, you know, I have this option, and congratulations, you just have a contract to sell your house under these terms and conditions. Security. People don't realize, but if you have long-term well-secured leases, and what do I mean by well-secured leases? Well, you can create the lease in a recordable contract format that has a legal description, that has acknowledgments on it, and so you can record that. I don't think that's well enough secured. I secure my good long-term leases with a deed of trust or a mortgage, depending on what state you're in, because a title company will not ignore a deed of trust or a mortgage. And if the owner ever wants to refinance, to sell, to do anything at all, they've got to come talk to me about that loan, that lien on their property. And so that's an opportunity to acquire some of the equity or get paid to remove my lease in some form or fashion. Other thoughts to just think about: if you're creating leases and your objective is long-term, think 5 or more years minimum. And the reason I say that is that if the owner has occupied this property themselves, which was the case for many of the properties I acquired, let's say they've moved to another location because for a job situation, and they thought they might come back. But once they get there and they put down roots and they develop friendships, they decide they're not coming back and they want to sell the property. Well, if it's an owner that lived in this house for 2 out of 5, I believe, under Section 121, they can take up to $250,000 worth of gain for an individual or $500,000 for a couple and not pay any taxes. Well, if I've got a lease on a property for a long enough time period, they can't use that tax benefit unless they can find someone they can sell it to subject to my lease, meaning someone can buy the property, but they don't have rights of possession. And in the house business, most people, when they want to buy a house, they want to physically move into the house or have the right to. So either way, it can be a payday for me at that point. You get to test drive the properties. I mentioned that, you know, I have found in my career, and I've been doing this since 1978, not all properties make good rentals. You know, the first negotiation you have with a master lease, everyone thinks, well, you have a master lease and that's it. That's not it. That's the first negotiation. A master lease gives you the time to create a rapport and gain trust with an owner. That's very, very important time. It gives you the time to, so to speak, whittle and rock with them, to under-promise and over-perform. And you can gain trust of owners. And, you know, let's face it, all properties are sold sometime, and your leasehold interest gives you a tremendous opportunity when an owner that you're dealing with decides to sell. If you've done more than you said you would do, and I think that's absolutely crucial because trust is so, so important. If you've done more than you've said you will do, the owner is now not in the same community. Who do they want to sell to? It's pretty obvious. And might they finance? Yes, they will oftentimes. And might they give you an opportunity at a price that they wouldn't give someone else? Yes, you can go from a lease with them to a closing. No downtime, no negotiation, no points, no commission. There's a tremendous opportunity that leaseholds give you to ultimately acquire the property. Now, I really think that, you know, from my standpoint, people ought to consider adding master leasing to their real estate investing toolbox. It's not the be-all and end-all. I still like to be in some form of ownership with the property. It's one of the things you do. But what are some of the benefits of adding it as a tool in your toolbox? First of all, little or no capital needed. You know, when I started out in this business, the first house I bought, if I remember right, cost me $28,500. We took it subject to a VA 8% loan back in 77 or 78, and we borrowed on our credit cards for the down payment. We wrapped the financing and resold it and took the spread. You can't do that stuff anymore. It's too hard. The values of properties have gone up so much, it's hard to make them cash flow. With a master leasing, no problem on that. You have less risk than ownership if property values drop. Again, think of the last drop that we had. And if my history tells me anything, it tells me that real estate cycles, they come and go. And the only thing I can honestly ever tell anyone about property when they ask me is that property values are going to go up, down, and sideways. And, you know, I'm usually wrong, but it sure seems to me like we're way high right now. And I'm waiting for the next opportunity to buy when everything crashes. I'd rather not buy when things are real high. You can draft by design and not by default. In every other real estate transaction that I can think of, you go to a closing and someone puts paperwork in front of you. Even if you pay cash, someone puts paperwork in front of you and you're signing other people's paperwork. Unless you do the closing yourself, but very, very difficult. Very different with a master lease. You are the conductor of the band. You get to create all the documents. So you create the document between you and the owner, and you create the sub-documents between you and occupants or people below you. Now, what does that mean? That means that when I'm leasing a property from an owner, you think the lease is going to favor the owner or favor me? It's going to favor me. And when I sublease that to someone else, that's also going to favor me. So you have the opportunity to essentially take on a kind of a, Dr. Jekyll and Mr. Hyde role, that you take two different positions depending on which side of the situation you're on. There is no standard paperwork. You know, you're not conformed to something else. It does mean you got to create your own, or you got to find folks that have some that make sense and then modify it. I would say you don't go to an attorney and say, create this lease for me, because they don't know what your business is all about. I think a better approach, if you want your attorney involved, is put something down on paper that you think makes sense and then take it to your attorney and say, is this defendable? And if it's not defendable, what do you need to do to make it defendable? I already mentioned that income's passive and it increases over time. You know, we were in the note business, and it's not that we will not look at notes now, but, you know, notes – income doesn't increase over time. Inflation takes a big bite out of them. They also stop at some point in time. They get paid off. And to find good notes at high yields, I find it's impossible. There's too much competition. everyone is so darned afraid of dealing with tenants and toilets that they think notes are an easier business. I can tell you, we ran a $3 million note portfolio in parallel to a $3 million house portfolio. And from my standpoint, I'd much rather have the house portfolio. I found the incomes much more predictable. I found them much more hedged to inflation. I found I could get all my rents in one day a month, whereas the notes, the income came in at various different times depending on what the notes said and when the penalties kicked in. A master lease works anywhere in the country, anywhere. It can work in the high-end Santa Barbara, California areas. It can work in Jackson, Mississippi, and anywhere in between. If you're leasing something in a high-end area that makes you nervous, do a performance lease that you only agree to pay a percentage of what you receive if and when you receive it. If you don't receive any money, you don't owe any rent. So you can always make a master lease work. And the beauty of it is it's not a one-size-fits-all. You really have to develop the owner's situation and then their problem and find out what they need. Give them what they need, or they're not going to do business with you. And once you give them what they need, see what's left. And you get to keep everything that's left. It's a really, is it a panacea? I don't know, but it's worked very well for me, worked well for my family and a lot of other folks. You get to control the property without ownership. You know, for those of us who've been in this business a long time, we've always been concerned about bullseyes on our back. You know, if we end up with a whole bunch of equities and a whole bunch of free and clear property, boy, isn't that an opportunity for someone to come after you with a slip and fall lawsuit? It's a much lower profile to be a tenant. And if the laws are pro-tenant, you are one. And, you know, the only way they can see you is if you have a good lease and you've recorded a deed of trust or a mortgage in the public record, you look like a lender. And lenders don't have the liability, potential liability, that owners do. You know, big ticket items that come up, again, since you've drafted the lease, things like you need a new roof on the property. That's not your problem. How many landlords who've bought properties using all their financial resources to get into them, then they find the furnace goes out. They have a problem. It is a problem for folks getting started in this business to be able to analyze what their future costs will be and to have the resources on hand to solve those when they come up, because they don't come up on a regular schedule. There's no bureaucratic control. If you're managing properties for people, I mentioned licensing. And, you know, it's so different than property management because you are not someone's agent. You are working for yourself. I'd also tell you there's zero competition. Very, very few people look at this. And to have this as one of the tools in your toolbox, it just makes so much sense. Negative cash flow properties can be positive cash flow for you. You really don't care what owners' mortgage payments are. That's their problem. Your marketing to someone that will have a negative cash flow property might be that you will lose them less than they are losing right now with a vacant house. You will find someone to be a good steward of the asset and move in and generate some income for them so that they can do what it takes to make their negative cash flow mortgages. Now, that does bring up a point. Whereas for so long we've talked about proper screening of tenants, that means that you've got to screen owners that have negative cash flow properties. You've got to make sure they have the financial ability to make those payments that they're obligated to make, number one. And number two, they have the willingness that credit's important to them. And I might suggest that if you have the ability to pull credit reports, that you pull credit reports on those owners, because you don't want to sign up what could be a good long-term lease for you, go in and kick the tires of the property and get it right, which takes some time, and all of a sudden find out they default and you might be losing your interest in the property. There is a law, a federal law, that can help, however, in that there's a law that if a foreclosure takes place, that a lease that is on the property is able to reside on the property for the balance of the lease as long as it's within a reasonable lease amount to market value. The exception is if the owner of the foreclosed property wants to move into it, then there is a procedure of, I think 3 months notice, and they can terminate your lease. But that was a law that was in place. It was not the law, and now my understanding it is back in the law as a permanent law for the future. So if you have a leasehold interest on a property that's foreclosed, you don't automatically lose your rights of possession. Increasing interest rates don't impact you at all. You really don't care. You have all the benefits that the owners don't need. So you find out what they need, and I said this before, but it's absolutely crucial. You can't go in and say, here's what I'm going to offer you. You have to go in and spend some time and discover what the owner's situation and problem is, and then this is one of the solutions you'll offer, and it might be a fixed lease, it might be a performance lease, and along with that, you might offer to buy the property, you might offer to finance. There's any number of different things you could do, but this gives you lots of opportunities that other investors just don't see at all. You can maintain your day job.
Let me add one little thing here, David.
You know,
here I live in Panama, and master leasing works very well in Panama. Just last month, I was contacted by a Panamanian lady that's living in California right now, and with 5 rental properties, and she said that she heard that I did property management and wanted to know if I could manage her properties. And I said, well, no, I don't do management, but I might be interested in renting your properties if I can sublease it to my tenants. And she said she didn't care, but she just wanted somebody to take care of the properties. So it works worldwide. It doesn't just work in the United States or Canada. You can do that anywhere.
Well, when I first started developing the concept, the first places I looked was Hong Kong, for example, that was leased by the Brits from the People's Republic of China for 100 years. And then we went to Hawaii, and I stopped at every title company to try and get master leases there, because most of Hawaii is on land leases that favor the Bishop Trust.
Mm-hmm.
So, in the commercial market, master leasing has been done for years and years and years. But in residential, on single-family houses, it's not something that people have done a lot with.
You touched on something that I think is real important, is that the last time that we had a big price drop in real estate prices was about 2007, 2008, and traditionally those cycles are about every 7 or 8 years that the prices go up and the prices come down. So you talked about how master leasing is safer. If you're master leasing a property, let's say it's worth $250,000, and all of a sudden there's a big change in the price of real estate, and all of a sudden it's only worth $180,000 or $150,000, none of that matters to you as a master lease, because your lease amount's going to be exactly the same. And there's going to be even more demand for rental properties when there's a big change in the pricing of homes. So it protects you when you're doing master leasing. Your lease amount's the same. What you can rent to people is the same. You may even be able to increase your rents. You should do it every year a little bit anyway, but you may be able to do a larger increase if there's a big price drop in the house prices. You get some really motivated sellers at that time too.
Yeah, I couldn't agree with you more. So what's the downside? Let's talk about the downside for a second. I don't think there is any if you know how to manage well. But I've thought for years that management is the key to the real estate business. Again, people who fix and flip, wholesale, do all these other things, that's great when they're young, have high energy, and are willing to work. at some point in your life, you either don't choose to do that activity or you can't because of health. And when that time comes about, it's sure nice to own good, free and clear properties to produce an income stream for you, whether you're sleeping, awake, or wherever you are in the world. And so I really do think management for the long-term investors is the key. So what do you need for master leasing? Number one, you need to be able to comply with all the laws, which means you need to know the laws. You need to be able to screen for the best tenants, not the first one that meets a minimum threshold standard. You're hiring someone to do a job. What we think we do more than anything else is hire a tenant to do a job for us. And what's the job? Number one, we want them to maintain and improve the house and grounds. Number two, we want them to pay the rent on time. That's a given. If they don't want to do that, they shouldn't rent from us because we're too tough. Number three, we want them to get along with the neighbors. Number four, we want them to stay. I look them in the eye, and we kind of joke about it, but I look them in the eye and say, I want you to stay at least until you die, and hopefully until your kids die. They may not want to stay that long. And lastly, we want them essentially to be our on-site resident managers taking care of most of the functions of that come from living in a house, and to use us only when they need additional support. So, you know, you've got to be able to share those expectations with your tenants. You got to be able to draft those documents that we talked about. You know, one that's pro-landlord, one that's pro-tenant. You got to be able to create consistent policies and procedures. That's really, really important. The consistency on your screening, for example, you don't want to violate any federal, state, or local fair housing laws. So you've got to have a regular procedure, and you really need to write those down and do the same thing every time. You got to systematize and automate, and you got to deal with problems immediately when they come up. You can't put your heads in the sand and think things will get better. They won't. Solve problems as they come up. But the systematize is so, so important in this business, and you can do that. You know, for example, if I say you don't want to deal with the first-come, first-serve applicant and put them in your house, but instead you want the best qualified, well, that means you've got to look for the needle in the haystack, and that may take going through 50 people. Well, if you tried to do that yourself, you'll go broke or you'll burn out. But if you have a system in place that does it without your involvement, that can solve that problem. From my standpoint, the biggest thing that I really try to do with landlords is get them to change their paradigm of the idea of landlord-tenant relationship to maximize their real estate results. You know, many people in this business, landlords, have all read the book Rich Dad, Poor Dad. And in the book, he talks about assets and liabilities, and he makes the point that assets pay you and liabilities eat you. And I'm here to tell you that a vacant house does not pay you. It eats you alive. There's so many different costs involved that people don't think of, and the turnover of tenants can really wipe you out. If you have someone move out on the last day of a month, and you have turnover once a year, and you can get the house ready for a new tenant in 2 or 3 days, you're really quick at doing the turnover, you haven't lost 2 or 3 days' rent. You've typically lost a whole month rent because most tenants want to move in on the first, and then they move out on the last of the month. And if you did that every year, you've lost 8%, 8.33% of your rent. You can't afford to do that. You also can't afford to do that because vacant houses have all kinds of problems associated with them. In some climates, air conditioning compressors disappear very quickly. When copper prices go up, wire is stripped out of walls. In Colorado, we can have frozen pipes in the winter in a very short period of time. In the summer, since this is a high desert area, if you don't water, lawns don't grow. So there's all kinds of costs and labor-intensive things that come from vacant houses. Those systems are so important to get them in place to so that you can square things away quickly. Your tenants, I really want people to view them as your on-site resident managers. You know, give them the control they need to do the job you've hired them to do. Understand it's your fault if they fail. It's not their fault. Something was wrong in your screening system. You didn't share expectations right. They didn't have the right skill set. Or else their moral code was wrong, and you need to really do an autopsy and go back and figure out what you need to change so that you never have that problem again. What else do I want to tell you? The landlording, in my opinion, really is a lazy man's way of playing the real estate game. There aren't many moving parts. If people saw my operation, they'd see it's only a couple hours a month. You know, I collect the rents. You don't do much in this business. Okay, so good management is the key to master leasing as it is to long-term ownership. You know, the income is not based on the time you spend managing. I just said I don't spend much time. I spend 8 months in Naples, Florida, 4 months in Colorado Springs. We have no employees, and our properties run just fine. Management proficiency allows you to acquire burned-out landlords' properties. You can master lease a whole portfolio of properties relatively easy because most landlords don't make it more than about 25 years. At some point in time, they say, I want to sell everything I got. I want to buy government bonds, clip coupons, and never have to deal with another tenant. Your skill set can help unintentional landlords solve problems that they can't solve. Good management doesn't mean traditional management, because we're talking about management companies, and they can't compete with someone doing master leasing. Why can't they? They have a one-size-fits-all. Someone calls them up and says, what do they say? They say, what do you charge? And they hear the amount that they charge, and that's the end of the discussion. They'll go call someone else. Whereas a master tenant, if someone calls me and says, what do you charge? I say, well, that depends. Sometimes we don't, we pay all the rent. We guarantee the rent every month, whether the property is vacant or full. So we need to get together and share some information. You need to know a little bit more about what it is I think I do, and I need to know a little bit more about your situation. You always want to get eyeball to eyeball, belly to belly, to have a negotiation, in my opinion, if you can. Very hard to accomplish over the phone. And when you can't give someone a cost when they're contacting you without seeing them, that gives you a benefit. What else? Good management skills come from working on your business.
Let me bring up one other thing. Yeah, let me bring up something because I implemented the techniques that you teach about property management with all of my rental properties that I had in Texas, and to some point even the ones that I have here in Panama. And the tenants that you get, they appreciate that you're not micromanaging them, that they have,
they sure do.
Almost like, yeah, that's you get, and then when you have a tenant that appreciates how you treat them, and you treat them like an adult, not a child, and that you don't bother them all the time, then you have a tenant that's going to stay forever and ever and ever. And, you know, whenever they have that choice between, well, you know, I'm going to get a 5% increase in my rent, or I could move and maybe lower it, but I don't know what my next landlord's going to be like because this one's been so great, I don't want to move. So a really good management system like you teach in your property management course, it gets the tenants on your side. It gets the owners on your side, so that the owners want you to, when it's time to renew that lease with them, they say, please, let's renew the lease. And when the tenants, when they have a choice between moving or renewing their lease, they're going to say, where do I sign? I want to renew my lease.
Well, think about what we're doing. we want our tenants to have much more than a temporary place to sleep. We want them to have a home with everything that implies, a place to feel safe, a place to call their own, a place where great memories can be created. We want them to feel that they can move in, put down roots, stay for a lifetime, or move if their circumstances change without a big negative consequences. We're really on their team. We wish them the best, you know, with whatever works out well for them in their lives. And we trust and respect them and empower them to make these limited decisions about maintaining the house and grounds. And as Jackie has just said, by doing that, allowing your occupants to take on this responsibility, it gives them a sense of ownership and pride, which really translates into better care of your property. So you're exactly right, Jackie. Letting tenants feel like the property is theirs to love and enjoy makes a world of difference.
Yeah, it really does. And I've had so many times whenever tenants would call up and say, you know, we'd like to enlarge the back patio, put a new cover over it, and at their expense. You know, they're not asking me to do it. They just want to make their home more livable for their lifestyle. And when they do those little improvements like that, that's just that many more years that they're going to stay. You want something where they can fill up the garage with all their stuff and... because they don't want to have to move all those things. So when you provide a good home and a good neighborhood and it's close to employment, close to good schools, and you empower the tenants, like you said, then you're going to get someone that stays. I've had tenants, you know, 10, 15 years. I know you've had them for even longer than that, for 20 years, because you treat them like an adult.
Yeah, I think that's right. You know, if you think about it, our objective is not to manage and control our tenants, but to inspire and influence them to buy into our vision of a better way for landlords and tenants to interact. Think about what tenants want and what landlords want. In most cases, it's the same. You know, think about this. Tenants want to live, I think number one, they want a safe environment. They want something that they feel safe. But landlords want safe properties, you know, safe environments also, because it means less management and it means more money to the bottom line. There's no conflict there. The tenants want well-maintained properties. Well, landlords, if the properties are well-maintained from day one, they generally get more rent. It appeals to a better applicant, and it's much cheaper to maintain a property than to run it in the ground and then resurrect. This doesn't mean, I'm not talking about, you know, $600,000 mansions. We have plenty of 800 square foot little box houses that we ran for years, and they worked out great, but things in them worked and we took care of stuff. You know, tenants want to understand their agreement regarding rights and obligations of both parties. And of course, as a landlord, I want my tenants to understand what they can expect from us and what we do expect from them. Of course, the tenants do want control of their occupancy. They both want to stay as long as they you know, forever if they want, but they also want to be able to move tomorrow if they want. And the landlord, I want control of the property. So we have to cooperate and mitigate each other's costs and damages. And I will tell you that my tenants do the most incredible job for me. When you know, I'm in Florida during the winter months, we had a tenant move out a year ago in December, and that tenant happened to be a British Army officer, and first thing he did was contact his replacement who was coming in and sell him on the benefits of our property and doing business with us. Then he contacted the British Embassy, who is always involved in providing housing. They provide all of the furniture, and he convinced the British Embassy that it was in their best interest, rather than to send in a mover to pack up the embassy's furniture, take it out, store it, wait a month until the new person came back to this area and found a house, and then move it back in, that it was cost effective for them to continue to pay the rent and keep it in this house. Then he went to a neighbor across the street and found a neighbor who had checked the house daily to make sure that the furnace didn't go off and the pipes were going to freeze. We did all of that, and during that tough time of the year, we didn't lose one day's rent, and in fact, we were able to increase the rent $100 a month because we extended the lease a little bit for the next person who moved in. Tenants will do the most incredible things for you if they're on the team. How do you get them on the team? Treat them with respect. Understand that they're your most valuable asset. They want to make your house their home. And I don't want tenants who, quote unquote, want to just camp out in my house. I want people who want to take my house and really internalize and make it theirs. They want more discretion to make decisions about maintaining the house and grounds. I want that too. I don't want to have to live with my ear glued to the telephone 24/7. I want self-directed people who will take charge and square things away. Some of the other things that I can just think of, they want honest landlords. Well, you want honest tenants. There's no conflict there. We all want respect. They want to be appreciated for their stewardship and for their business. How many landlords thank their tenants for their business and really look to the tenant's interest and what they need? Without good tenants, I couldn't do what I do. But with good tenants, I have wonderful relationships. I just have a tremendous, just a great time with them regularly. Doesn't mean we socialize with them. We don't. Until they're no longer a tenant, then we do. We have visited prior tenants in Hawaii. We visited prior tenants in Switzerland. They're wonderful people, but it is a business while they're in our properties.
Exactly. Well, David, I'm sure after everyone's heard all the benefits of doing master leasing and the importance of learning how to do effective property management, that they would like to learn how to do this. And it just so happens you have a seminar that's coming up to teach people how to find these master leasing opportunities, how to structure it, and also how to do effective property management. Tell us a little bit about when is your seminar, where is it, and how can they get more information?
Sure. This, I believe, is the 28th year that we've held this seminar. We only hold it once or at most twice a year. And we are holding a seminar September 21st, 22nd, and 23rd in Costa Mesa, California. It's a three-day seminar. It's 2 days of hassle-free property management and 1 day of master leasing. I won't let anyone take a master leasing class without first going through the management class, because you'll hurt yourself and hurt other people if you attempt to master lease without first knowing good management skills. They can find out more about the seminar at davidtilney.com, and it's David, and I'll spell Tilney. It's T as in Thomas, I-L, N as in Nancy, E-Y.com. If I haven't said, it's going to be the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd of September. What else, Jackie? I think...
Don't you have some kind of an early bird special for people that sign up by a certain date?
Yeah. Oh, boy, I'd forget to say anything if I didn't get a lot of help from my friends. We do, and they can go online and see, but it is there's quite a discount before the cutoff date, which I believe is next Monday or maybe Tuesday. It's right after Labor Day. And the reason we really have the cutoff is we lose our room block at the hotel. And we want people to be able to sign up and register, get a room, and be able to get relatively cost-effective transportation to California. I mean, obviously, we have local people from California coming, but typically, I think the last seminar we did, we had people from 29 states. So we're trying to get people to save a little bit, both on our seminar and on transportation and on accommodations when they're there. So if you are interested, sign up sooner versus later. It'll be better for you.
Right. So once again, to get more information, to learn about master leasing and property management, hassle-free property management, just go to www.davidtilney.com for more information about what's going to be taught at the seminar on the 21st, 22nd, and 23rd, and more details about that early bird special. There is a cutoff, so don't delay. You need to go to the website and check it out sooner rather than later, because if you wait too long, it'll be too late. There's no more early bird special. David, I want to thank you so much for sharing this information. If people aren't fired up about master leasing after this little talk, then they need to have their head examined, because master leasing is such a magical way to make a lot of cash flow without the liability of ownership. Everybody needs to learn how to do it. It's not the perfect fit for every single transaction, but you need to know how to do it. So when the opportunities come along, then you know exactly what to do, how to do it, and how to do it effectively.
Yeah, just think of it as another tool in the toolbox. It's not the be-all and end-all, and we all need to keep educating ourselves and trying new things. But this is something that we started in 1984. In October of 96, I canceled every agency relationship I had because I was a licensed real estate broker managing properties, turned around and leased all the properties I used to manage and did not lose one account. We've never looked back. Our kids are doing it. We just think, we had someone who came to a class that we did in Colorado last year, and he was a pastor. He was planting new churches, and he didn't generate income from his avocation, or not enough. And so he came to that, and he's leased, I think he told me the other day, 11 or maybe 12 houses in a year. Subleased them all as vacation rentals, and it solved his whole problem. So there's just so many different things you can do with this. It's as big an area as your mind can just conceive.
It really is. David, thank you again for joining me on the call and for sharing this amazing information.
Oh, thanks so much, Jackie. Always enjoy being on your calls. Thank you.
Thank you.